Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Coming up to us from Spain, Ole Damigard.
Well, my name is Ole Damigard. I'm a Danish-born author, investigator, journalist, and inventor. And for the last 30 years, I've been investigating many of the major conspiracies on a global scale, everything from JFK, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, 9/11, Oklahoma City, the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, but also the assassinations of musicians and so on. So this is the last year or so I've been on very, very many international radio shows speaking about these conspiracies, because I've been able to, through my research over all of these years, I've been able to connect more or less all of them and point it back to the same global elite group, which has also used many of the same assassins to carry out these deeds. So this is why I'm here, and this is why I'm really happy to be with you today.
Well, I know that you were extremely secretive for a while, and now you're extremely public. Can you tell us about why you made that transition?
Well, I started in the early 1980s looking into the JFK assassination. I was almost obsessed with it for many years. And then after that, I started looking into Robert Kennedy and the Olof Palme assassination and so on. And it didn't take very long before I noticed that people who dig too deep, who come too close to the truth, have a very bad habit of dying in strange accidents or ending up in their own bathtub, fully dressed, drowned, or shooting themselves from behind with a shotgun and so on. So I felt that even in Sweden, where there's a lot of these strange deaths as well surrounding the Olof Palme assassination, I felt that there were two ways to go if I wanted to be able to continue on this road of exposing what was really going on. And it was either to keep a very high profile, to get the spotlight on me, because then if something would happen to me, that would just confirm the things that I had been saying, or go on a very, very low, like stealth type of trip where go under the radar to keep as slow a profile as possible. And since I was a Mr. Nobody at that time, I chose to go under the radar and be as discreet as possible. But then after some, I think it was about 8-10 years, that I had been really, really looking into this very deeply together with some other friends. Two of my friends unfortunately died in very awful circumstances. And this led me to decide to leave Sweden. I immigrated. Now I live in Spain. And then I've written this book called Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, which is a very detailed study of the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, but also connecting it with many of the other major conspiracies and the Gladio Network and the Freemasonry Network and so on. And like I say, this book is called Coup d'etat in Slow Motion. And for years I tried to get it published, but no one dared to do it. There were many publishers looked at it, but they said, if we publish this, we're going to be sued from here to the moon. So I just kept it on a low burner, so that I didn't know what to do with it, until more or less exactly a year ago, when I decided to, in an effort to get this truth off my shoulder, because I felt that I was the only one with a lot of this information, which made me very vulnerable and easy to take out. So I decided to put it out on the internet for free, just push it out there as soon as possible and as fast as possible, so that it couldn't be stopped. And so that is what I decided to do. I put up a website called lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com. And I, through a Facebook network and other networks, I just pushed this book, this information out globally, within 2-3 hours, it was just all over the place, which felt extremely good for me, because then suddenly it wasn't knowledge that was only known by me, but it was shared by many. So I felt a lot safer. But after that, it almost created like a tidal wave of interest, and I was approached by radio shows from all over the world. And I don't know how many shows I've been on this last year, but it's very many, many of the big ones and so on. And yesterday, my website had passed the 60,000 hits.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that the power of the internet is working for you, and I'm certainly hoping for a long and healthy life for you in Spain.
Thank you for that. So do I.
You mentioned the murders of the musicians. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I tell you that one of the things that I found that connects many of these big political assassinations is a group called Operation 40. It was a group of very skilled assassins that was put together in the very early 1960s. It was President Dwight Eisenhower who gave his vice president, Richard Nixon, the task to gather a force, an invisible force of assassins that could be used to take out problem makers or presidents in other countries or whoever they wanted to get rid of. And this group consisted of mostly exiled Cubans, but also people from the CIA, like Ted Shackley, like E. Howard Hunt, like David F. C. Phillips, and so on. And they were very deeply involved in the Kennedy assassination, where many of the shooters and other people involved were part of this Operation 40. One of the people, the key people in this group, was a man by the name of Jose Perdomo, who was a former police officer when he immigrated to the States. He joined this Operation 40, and he was part of many of these assassinations. And for 10 years, he was one of the highest ranking officers in this. And on the night when John Lennon was shot, when he arrived to the Dakota building, first, it's important also to know what was happening, because he had been away for quite a few years, taking care of his son and family and so on. But now he was just in the middle of making a major comeback. And this was a man that spoke out for peace. And this is always the same problem, more or less. All of these people that are taken out are peacemakers, that people that stands up and speaks the truth against war, against violence, against occupation, against invasion, and so on, and stands up for peace. And for the military-industrial complex and the global elite that is behind it, this is a major problem, especially when it comes to a very public figure where people listen to him. And this is the reason why people like John Lennon, Martin Luther King, Lady Diana, Bob Marley, so these have worked for the same reason. Anyway, this evening, it's more or less exactly on the day of the anniversary, on the 8th of December, John Lennon and Yoko Ono came from the studio, and they arrived in front of the Dakota building in New York, in the limo. And when they went out of the car, Mark Chapman, who is the guy who's now sentenced for the assassination, but in my opinion was a patsy, who was put there to take the fall, he was standing to the right of the limo. And Yoko Ono first left the car and started walking into the building, and then John Lennon followed like 5 or 6 meters after. What happened was that a few seconds later, there were fire shots fired, and four of them hit John Lennon. All four of them hit him straight from the left, his shoulders and in the left side of the body, and he fell down, started crawling into the building, but more or less died instantly. He was taken to the hospital where there was he was beyond health and so on. But the main question is, when you go to a crime scene like this, you have the victim here, the shots were fired from this angle, so who was standing there? And at this very day, the doorman that was working there was a former CIA employee and also part of Operation 40, named Jose Perdomo. This is the officer I was talking about. This is that for 10 years was the highest ranking officer of one of them for the most highly skilled team of assassins in the history of the United States. So my question is, how big are the chances that he was the one that actually killed Lennon, being the one that stood exactly where the shots were fired from? I mean, for me, it's a very open case. He is then the one who is said to have rushed over to Chapman and taken away the gun from him, also saying, you know what you just did? You just shot Lenin. And from that point, when he said that, I don't know if your listeners are so aware of the MK Ultra program and so on, where they have been preparing patsies and using mind control patsies in many of these different assassins. And one of the things that they have in common is that they very often almost like get triggered by a certain sentence or word or sound or so on. And from then on, they, after the hit is done, they stand like zombies, more or less, just waiting to be taken. And after that, once they start talking, telling about what happened, they talk about it totally without emotions. There's no real motive. And it's almost like it's a loop, like they're repeating the same words again and again and again when it comes to this thing. And this is exactly what happened with Mark Chapman as well. So I truly believe that the real killer of John Lennon was José Perdomo, a member of Operation 40, and that one of the people that were behind this assassination in the planning has been pointing out to be Ted Shackley, who was extremely high up in the DIA as well.
You mentioned sort of the other musicians, Bob Marley, Peter Tosh.
Bob Marley and Peter Tosh, I think there's a lot of people that are not aware of how important Bob Marley was. Maybe most people think that he was a guy sitting smoking spliffs in the corner just saying, "Rastafari man." But this was a highly, very, very brave and very political person. He was both on Jamaica but also internationally. He was... they tried to get rid of him at least once before, where he was attacked and shot at. He was also wounded. They made an attack in his house. It was just when he was trying to unite Jamaica, because there was almost a civil war going on, but there was a massive conflict between the political powers on Jamaica. And he was part of arranging a peace concert where he would be the one that united the two, and they really tried to stop him from doing that. He was shot and wounded, but still he went ahead and performed this in this concert, even though many people said, if you go up on stage there, they will assassinate you, but he still did it. Anyway, Peter Tosh was a former musician in his band, and he was also very outspoken, just like Bob Marley, against the powers, the big powers behind the wars and the these things and the oppression of people and so on. And Peter Tosh as well was shot dead. He was assassinated in his own house. There were two people that forced their entry and kept him and some friends and family as hostage. And then in the end, they killed him. But Bob Marley, he continued. One of his girlfriends was the beauty queen of Gabon. And she was the daughter of the dictator there. And he went there with her and made quite an impact on that country. And then afterwards, when Rhodesia went into Zimbabwe, he was invited there to come and help celebrate the new freedom of the people and so on. And they couldn't raise the money, but Bob Marley put in his own money to be able to ship the equipment and everything over there. And he went there, and it made an incredible impact. And I think this is one of the reasons they started seeing the danger of how big he was going to become, because he was the one that would have united Africa, I would say, and get it to an uprising state where it would have been a massive problem for this global elite. I think it's also important to understand how close in time these assassinations are. They look like they are apart, just like you talk about Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy. Not many people are aware of that there was only a few months in between, you know, same year, very short time in between. It was almost like they tried to stop Robert Kennedy by killing Martin Luther King. They wanted to get rid of him anyway, but Robert Kennedy just wouldn't stop, and then they had to take him out as well. When it comes to John Lennon, Lennon was killed in the beginning of December 1980, and Bob Marley died just a few months later. But the thing is that most people think that he died from cancer, which is the official story. And that is also true. He died from cancer, but where did this cancer come from? And in 1976, I think it was the same year, it was just a few weeks after he had been, this attempted murder attempt on him, he was approached by Bill Colby, the former, or at that time he was the chief of the CIA, the director of the CIA. His son was making different documentaries, film documentaries, and he approached Bob Marley to make a documentary. So they met up, and as a nice gesture, this Colby Jr. had brought with him a pair of cowboy boots, and Bob Marley, he was really, really excited. He loved the boots, so he pulled them on, and the witnesses that were there said that when he pulled on one of the boots, he just shouted out, and when he took off the boot again, his big toe had been punctured by a little piece of copper wire that was in his boot. And this is the same toe that he later developed cancer.
Really?
And I don't know about you, but I never heard about anyone had cancer in his big toe, but that's where it all started, and that was the cancer that killed
him. Wow.
There are also many question marks around the doctor that he was later treated by, who had a former Nazi background.
Really?
And so on. It doesn't really make sense for a Rastafari and a Nazi to join.
Indeed. Well, we're going to have to cut things short. We're out of time. But thank you so much for visiting with us and sharing this. I know I'm going to be using Google to find out more about some of these things. And thank you again for being a regular columnist on the show. We'll look forward to hearing from you next month. Well, next year.
But thank you, Chuck, and please, if anybody wants, my website is www.lightonconspiracy.com, and my book will be available on Amazon here within the next few weeks.